You are now listening to the Photography Enthusiast Podcast. Welcome to another episode of the Photography Enthusiast Podcast. As always, I am your host, Daniel Lee, or Photos by DOEE. So today we're going to be talking about, are photography competitions worth entering and worth your time? We'll also cover off in a little bit of news, and as always, what I've been up to. So to stick with the same format to start off, what I've been up to and some personal updates. Haven't been taking photos much, so if you do check out my website, photosbydoee.com. I usually release a blog post every fortnight. I didn't do it this fortnight, mainly because I only had like 3 photos to, you know, share if I did. Just haven't had the mood or the energy or anything to do anything. I've just been pretty much playing games. Like I play, if you know, SimCity. I've been playing City Skyline. I've been playing the older SimCity games as well. I love city building games and just trying to design something that looks nice. Have started to sort of look at my camera, not use it, but look at it and sort of take it out and about with me. But I don't know, I just haven't had the mood, haven't had the energy. And I feel like you need the creativity. Sometimes you just got to force yourself, keep shooting. But at the same time, I think it's because I'm going back to work, back to a new job and back to the office. I feel like I don't have much time. So I'm just sort of, you know, don't want to waste even a second of it just because, you know, everything's more limited now once I'm not work from home. I was going to go out shooting yesterday, but yeah, weather was really good, just didn't have the time, sadly, so that had to go on the back burner. Otherwise, I've started to write reviews for the IR 50mm, 35, and 85. I think I'll probably do the 55 first, oh sorry, 50 first, then the 35, or maybe then the 85, then the 35, because the 35's already been out for years, there's so many reviews for it, whereas the 50 and the 85 are newer, so that's why I sort of prioritize them. Otherwise, that's pretty much it for personal updates. Next, we're going to just jump straight into the news. So the first piece of news is good for those who own the Nikon Z mount, because they have launched both their 105mm f2.8 and 50mm f2.8 Z mount macro lenses. It's good to see them already sort of getting in the macro area and not sort of waiting longer, because, you know, macro is a very popular genre, not just with people who shoot macro of insects or whatever, nature, that kind of stuff. A lot of wedding photographers use it in weddings for their ring shot, so it's good to definitely have this in your lineup. With the 105mm f2.8, it has a minimum focusing distance or close focusing distance of 0.96 feet. If you're in the US, you obviously know how far this is. I have no clue because I'm in Australia, so we use centimeters, meters, that kind of stuff. I was going to say another word, but so I have no clue how close that is. I assume it's around 30 centimeters or something, because that's usually how close these macro lenses go. As always, like most macro lenses, it has a focus limiter. Okay, so I think it's 0.29, so 29 centimeters is how close it can focus. Looking at pictures of the lenses, you can see what the focus limiter is. And obviously on the lens, they use meters, not feet. So yeah, it's got 0.29 to 0.5 meters and then full. So clearly that means 0.29 is the minimum focusing distance, which is 29 centimeters. Sample photos look decent. They even include a portrait in there, which is nice to see. I don't know if the rendering is as nice in terms of how an 85mm would do it. This is just, I'm purely talking about the portrait, but it is pretty nice. It's $1,000 apparently being released in late June, so a decent price as well for what it can do. You'll find most macro lenses around that same price range as well. Now, in terms of the 50mm f2.8 macro, this one has a 0.53 foot minimum focusing distance, and I don't believe there is a focus limiter on this one, so I'm not able to tell how much this is in meters or centimeters. Apparently, this one is also dust and drip resistant, so if you are wearing really nice clothes, it will not show up in the images. Not a bad joke, but... And apparently they actually include a control ring on this one, which can be assigned a bunch of variety of different functions. So it's good to see that Nikon are getting into the whole control ring and that sort of stuff as well. In a way, I actually like the photos from the 50mm f2.8 better than the 100mm. I've actually, as I mentioned, you know, used 50mm a lot more recently, and I think it works very well for product, macro, that kind of stuff. Not too wide, not too long. Obviously, sometimes with insect macro, that kind of stuff, the longer focal lengths can be a bit better, but this does definitely look good, and for $650, it's a very good price as well. In part of this as well, Nikon did announce that they're developing two more primes, a 28mm f2.8 and a 40mm f2, which is a bit, you know, interesting for focal lengths to choose. They're not the most common focal lengths, but I know in the Sony world, 28mm is quite popular, and a lot of people do always request for more lenses of that focal length. For me, it's sort of, you know, I would probably go wider or go for 35mm. 28 sort of, I guess it's a good middle point if you like both focal lengths, but yeah, I just more 35 everything, 35 and 85. For the next piece of news, we've got more information about the EOS R3. So Gordon Lang, he actually had a video of it. He couldn't turn it on, couldn't talk about performance, any of that kind of stuff, but he actually had the body with him to show us, which it looks very nice. I love the material of the grip on it. Now that they've done that, we've got a more updated specs on it. So I'll just quickly go through all the specs that we know so far. Some of them are existing, some are new. So it's a, as you know, full frame stacked BSI backside illuminated CMOS sensor. Still don't know the resolution. They still haven't announced that. Multi-controller and smart controller, very angled touchscreen, which is very, very welcome. It has to be very angle all the time now. New accessory shoe, which looks very interesting. It's not like a normal, you know, hot shoe. It's very different. So I can't wait to see more of that. 5 GHz Wi-Fi, high speed 30fps electronic shutter with AF and AE tracking, plus raw shooting at this speed. AF down to -7 EV, which is a new one and very, very impressive. 8 stops coordinated control with IS and in-body IS. 4K Canon log, boring. Oversampled 4K, internal raw video, inclusion of cars and motorbikes, AF tracking technology, which is brand new, and this will be very interesting. So it's sort of aimed really for sport photographers. Raw and internal movie recording, speed light shooting with electronic shutter. That's a new one and very, very promising and exciting to learn more about. The same weather sealing as the EOS 1D series and the LP E19 battery, which is the same as the EOS 1D series and is compatible with SD and CF Express cards. And it's not been known yet, apparently, if they're separate slots or they're dual purpose. Hopefully dual purpose, it would be a lot better, but who knows. From the looks of the specs on this camera, I honestly think maybe the R3 will be more like an R1, 1D series, in the sense that I think it's going to be around 30 megapixels, somewhere around there, but then focus on speed. Because, you know, with the A1, I believe you can only shoot 30fps with compressed RAW, not uncompressed RAW. So with this, maybe they're going to do it. So it's a lower resolution, but you can shoot, you know, uncompressed RAW. This one will be the more speed-based body. And then maybe the R1 will be the high-res one that's sort of like more like your A1, you know, 50, 45, 50 megapixels sort of thing, but then still quite fast. But then obviously that little issue of compressed RAW rather than uncompressed. Obviously, as you know, they tease more and more stuff, we'll get to see more and more. I'm very excited to see how this actually camera performs, you know, in real world situations. Apparently, Canon have said the tracking on this improves on the one on the R5 and R6. And considering the tracking on that camera is already insane, you know that it's going to be, I don't even know how good it will be. It'll be market, like industry leading autofocus tracking, I would say easily. Be interesting if this actually is the first body we see with quad pixel AF as well, rather than dual pixel. Because some people do find there's issues in focusing on vertical, I believe it's vertical based contract, not the horizontal one. So this may fix it. So for the next story, Panasonic has launched the Lumix S50 f1.8 full frame L mount lens, not E-mount. So, you know, the usual type of 50mm f1.8, they do make sure to mention that it's not just a stills lens, that it's very capable of use for hybrid photographers who want it for video as well. Apparently it's very suited to that. So when there's reviews of it, it'll be interesting if it's, you know, they find that AF isn't as good for stills or as fast and it's more smooth for video, who knows. 300 grams, which is a pretty decent size and weight. The lens is also dust and splash resistant, and apparently can perform and handle in adverse conditions and temperatures as low as 14 degrees Fahrenheit, which I once again have no clue how cold that is because we use Celsius. It has a 67mm filter diameter, which is very common, easy to get, you know, I guess filter adapters for it, always use square filters, but I guess for video most people don't use square filters though. But apparently there's also 24 and 35mm in development. They do release quite slow, I'd have to say, for Panasonic lenses. It will be $450, so US, so not cheap. Definitely not like, say, Canon 51A cheap. I'd be curious how this resolves and how it looks image-wise compared to the Canon. With the Canon, you know, most companies with their 51A's like Nikon, Sony, now even Panasonic, they take a different sort of approach with their 50mm lenses. They see them, you know, just because it's 1.8 doesn't mean it has to be a cheap lens. Though with Canon, honestly, you'll get to see it when I write my full review and do a podcast for it, but the IRF 50mm 1.8, it's not as cheap as the EF lens, but I honestly think it's better in a lot of ways. The build feel quality feels much better to me. Not much better, but I don't know why, it just doesn't feel as cheap of a lens, and image quality is amazing. Bokeh is beautiful on it. Sharpness is really, really good. I don't think it's as good as, say, the 35-1.8, but at the same time, the 35-1.8 is double the price of it. But for what it is, it has really good image quality. I would recommend it to anyone. You know, it's a quick spoiler. But once I do a review, I'll probably be able to post more post-photo examples so you actually get a good idea of how good it is and what kind of quality it offers. The final one is just a quick, brief one. I feel sorry for them in a way. It's not the article, type of article you would think. But Nikon had an article about their Z9 and, you know, the expectations around it. So the very headline of the first paragraph of this sort of sets the tone for it. So it says, in a recent interview with FileWeb, Nikon's Fumiyuki Wako, the company's general manager planning and marketing, said that the team developing the upcoming Z9 professional camera was dealing with great expectations and responsibilities, and that they were struggling to reach the goal. My guess would be autofocus, because, you know, Canon and Sony have been doing their on-sensor phase detect autofocus for a very long time. Like, Canon has had dual pixel AF for ages, well before mirrorless. They had on their M series cameras and even a lot of the DSLRs going back to like your 5D4, 60 Mark II, they had really good dual pixel autofocus. And even before that, they were already working on it. Whereas Nikon's very new to this. They had only introduced on-sensor phase detect AF, I believe anyway, once they did their mirrorless cameras. Before that, it's very slow. My guess is that is where they are struggling, is in terms of autofocus speed. But because, you know, honestly, image quality, Nikon has it in the bag. They always have great dynamic range, great colors. Ergonomics, I honestly think Nikon cameras are really good for their ergonomics. Like I said, even the design and the feel of the Nikon Z9, actually not Z9, sorry, Z6 Mark II, I could happily use that camera just on the way it feels in the hand and the look of it, the EVF, all of that is good. The only area that Nikon has been, you know, lagging behind the competition in terms of, you know, their mirrorless cameras is, to be honest, lenses, they're quite a bit behind as well, but autofocus. Autofocus is where they have their troubles. So this is why I'm guessing why they're saying they're struggling to reach their goal. Although, you know, Sony have theirs out, Canon about to release theirs. I don't think they should rush. They should just still get it right. You know, even if they have to release 6 months a year later, if that means they can have autofocus that beats the competition or at least matches it without hassle, then they should just go for that and wait for that. Don't release for the sake of releasing, because then, you know, sure, they can release a Mark II like after a year or two, like they did with the Z6 and the Z6 II, the Z2 and the Z7 Mark II. But, you know, it's really bad. Honestly, I feel like for the people who buy that original body, they may not want to sell and then have to upgrade again so soon. Sort of like a slap in the face to them. So I always feel that you're better off just waiting, getting it right and releasing it once, not, you know, every 2 years like what Sony used to do. So that's it for the news. We're now onto the main topic. Photography competitions are something you'll commonly see all the time, whether it be a local one for your local photography club, maybe the manufacturer of camera you use, Canon, Sony, Nikon have one going that you can enter, or maybe it's a global one like the Sony World Photography Awards. There's lots of different types of photography competitions, lots of different rules. There's some paid ones, some free ones, some that just are rights grabs, some scams as well that you have to be careful of, but are they worth entering and are they worth your time and effort sort of thing? I would say, you know, straight up spoiler, yes. Sometimes they can inspire you to get out there and shoot. So for example, if you know every year there's a black and white photography competition, which I believe there's one black and white landscape or something here in Australia they do, that inspires you to get out and constantly shoot and get that image that you want to enter in the competition. So it does, you know, help you shoot in that sense. Some of these competitions as well have different requirements as well that you have to keep in mind when you're doing that. So, you know, some don't mind composites and don't mind editing, whereas others are strictly against it and you have to have your raw file present to be able to show what kind of edits you've done to show the original image. if you look anywhere online, you'll be able to find articles and situations where someone has entered a competition and replaced the sky or something like that, and then entered it, won the competition. Later on, they get caught for not, you know, for replacing the sky, and the award gets taken back off of them and they get stripped of their title and banned again forever. You know, because these awards are meant to be in competitions, are meant to be purely, you know, no composites only, but these people break the rules. There's also been ones where they've come into question. I remember there was one female photographer where she was sort of accused of plagiarism because it was like a photo of a woman floating with all these balls around her, which someone else had done and entered in another competition, and it was too similar. There was a big controversy around that as well. You'll also find some have questionable ways of judging. So you'll get the competitions that have a panel of judges, which I feel are the most legitimate. And then you have ones that are just, you know, vote for which one you like best, which is a popularity contest. And people can get their friends to vote, family. You know, you could probably even design a bot to just constantly flood it with votes. So I never trust those kind of ones. You'll also find that depending on what the judges have in mind and their style of photography, what they think is good is very different. I'll get a little bit more into that when I discuss one of these ones, but you'll find that, yeah, it can be very different. You think that you've got the best image, even if you see the finalists. Doesn't even have to be one you entered. If you look at the finalist images, the one they picked as number one may be nothing like what you pick as number one. As after all, photography is very subjective, but sometimes, you know, that subjective taste of yours is very different to what someone else is, especially if they're the judge. I thought it'd be fun to just go over my experiences of entering photography competitions, what I've found over the years. I actually haven't entered that many, but the ones I have, you know, it's been a pretty good experience. So the first one was the Passion for Perth Photography Competition. This one was back in like, what, 2013, 2014. I entered, I think it was 2013. That one, first photography competition I ever entered. I entered a photo of Applecross Jetty, which is, you know, in Perth near where my girlfriend used to live. It was just like a sunset blue hour kind of shot down there. It was a pretty nice shot. And the competition was meant to be about what, you know, show what life is like in Perth or something. And there was people fishing on the jetty, you know, just quiet, relaxing, which is Perth is very quiet, that kind of stuff. So I entered that one and it was a prize of $1,500. At the time I wasn't working and I was pretty broke. So I really wanted the 60, but I had the 550 due still and I couldn't really afford it. But, you know, that went on sale just before the photography, so the competition had finished and that. So I was like, oh, I need to win this, you know? So when I got into the finals, I saw them and I was like, oh my God, I actually have a chance of winning this. And, you know, in the end, they actually picked my photo, which the funny thing was, is 2 months up to it, leading up to the announcement of who the winner was, I was checking his website every day, even though they said, I think it was like November 11th or something like that, they're going to announce who the winner is. I would check it every day, even though there's not going to be any change because they're not going to announce it yet. But I would still check it. I checked it so much. They come to like a week before or more. I completely forgot about it. I completely forgot to check who the winner was. Of course, I finally remembered, hey, what happened with that competition? I logged onto their website, checked it, and my God, I see the winner is my photo there, Daniel Lee. I was like, oh my God, you know, it was amazing, 1500. Of course, I was like, what happened? And I checked my junk mail. I got an email saying, we've sent you the check. And then I went, of course, to my PO box at the time because I use a PO box, which is much better, to be honest. And it was there. There was my check for $1,500 and that paid for my 6D. So, you know, like there was no question about, even though I didn't have that much money at the time, there was no question about what I was going to use that money for. The photography got me that money. So that was going back into my photography, investing back in myself, which that body, I loved that body for so long. The autofocus was frustrating. Like going back in time, it was good compared to my 550D, but I could not use the autofocus on the 6D. I couldn't use the 6D anymore after using the R6 and any mirrorless camera. Hell, I couldn't use any DSLR, even a D850S, using a mirrorless camera. But so that was the Passion for Perth. The next one was the Emerging Artist Award. So that one was a tougher one because I didn't win. Spoiler. I've technically gotten the finals, but the finals was like a massive amount of people as well. It's not like five people or four people like the Passion for Perth. I think there was about like 20, 30, 40 people in the finals. And it wasn't just photography, it was painting, photography, and drawing. It's pretty much open art. I think there was even sculptures there or something. So with this one, I believe I was the only photographer in there, and I actually had to have a canvas printed to enter this. So that was a fun thing. I got my canvas printed, I entered it, I got to go, they had like a night, award night. I went there, you know, had my canvas shown up on the wall. So, you know, like typical, just stand like 10 meters away, I mean, to 5 meters away and just watch to see what people think or say about my photo. And if anyone, people look at it, which a few people do look at it, which was pretty good. But, you know, just being there, you could tell the, I sort of vibe of the community. They're all very artsy people, you know? And I was like, yep, no chance. All paintings. Of course, all the winners were paintings. There was no non-paintings winners. I don't think even the sculptures or anything won. It was just paintings. But it was a good experience. You know, I didn't mind. I found it fun getting to have my photo printed on the canvas was actually really good too. I'd love to have more photos printed on the canvas, but my girlfriend won't let me hang them on the walls. So no point in printing in that sense. But that was, after that, I hadn't entered the competition for a while. Then came the Sony World Photography Awards. Now, these are just the World Photography Awards, but they are sponsored by Sony. So that's where the difference is. I've entered this for like 3-4 years in a row now. Never get shortlisted, never get anywhere. This is what I was talking about before. So this is a very sort of subjective type. So the best example I can give, I do a lot of street photography and I always tend to enter street images. Now, if you search street photography, the type of photos that come up are very different to what I take. I take like a more, what's called cinematic style street photography. Now, there was one year I remember I was so annoyed because one of the shortlisted images, I think it might even be the winning image. Now, no offense, I seriously doubt the person who had that image or won would be listening to this podcast. But if you are, I apologize. It's more just your photo didn't match what I sort of like as for street photography. The winning image was just a kid like sort of climbing up on a fence. That was it for street photography. But to me, I didn't see, you know, anything in it. Obviously, the judges seen something in it. But for me personally, this is where subjective comes in. I didn't see anything in it. My photo, I'll describe it actually. It was at Vivid here in Sydney. It was a candid image of this couple sharing a hug and a kiss. And behind them, they had the Vivid light. So there's all these lights coming up in the sky. So it looked like, you know, something you see out of a movie where couples kiss and then these, you know, fireworks in the background kind of thing. To me, that was like an amazing street moment. Something you couldn't, you know, especially for a candid image, it was perfect in my opinion. I wouldn't change it. Obviously, it was really dark at night, so super high ISO. Otherwise, I wouldn't change anything about the image even to date. But, you know, didn't get anywhere in the photo. Didn't even get shortlisted. I would have been happy even to be shortlisted. But each year I've entered, don't really get anywhere. Does it bother me? No, I enter it for fun anyway. Because the whole point of it is, can be fun, especially competitions like this. It's not like you have to go out and do something or pay them out. They're free competitions. Why not enter anyway? If you are concerned with people using your images for, you know, marketing purposes or commercial purposes, you do have to be careful when you enter these kind of competitions because sometimes they do have the right to share your images. Usually it's with full credit, but you just got to keep that in mind. So to summarize, photography competitions can definitely be fun and definitely worth your time, but, you know, just don't get your hopes up. You should sort of do that with anything, you know, like they say always, hope for the best, prepare for the worst. Might not fit this situation as much, but it's an opportunity to get out there and shoot, opportunity to learn, to see how your skills, don't ever let yourself get down if you don't win a competition. Keep in mind it's subjective, and just because you didn't win it or you didn't get shortlisted or whatever doesn't mean your image is bad. It's just that person has different tastes to you, and, you know, it's just an opportunity to improve the next time. That brings this podcast to an end. I hope you've enjoyed it. Thank you very much for listening. As always, you can find the show notes at thephotographyenthusiast.com. If you want to follow me, you can follow me on Twitter. All my links, I won't even bother saying because the links will be in the show notes. If you want to see my blog, photosbydle.com. Otherwise, thank you very much for listening. Enjoy the rest of your week and take care. See ya.